This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Before the pandemic and before business was completely thrown off balance, we used to focus on the importance of data and what it could tell us about not just where we are, but also how to deal with the future. The retail industry thrives on data. Data can tell them about their customers and how to solve problems, and it can also tell them how to do better next year than they did this year. But what does data have to say about the pandemic and its effects on the retail industry? And more importantly, can data analytics help businesses recover faster and reduce the long-term toll that the crisis has taken on their growth and their finances? To shed some light on the role of data in the retail scene, we got in touch with Vernon Chua. He's a retail data expert and CEO of Energia Labs, whose flagship product Cicada empowers SME retailers with retail business intelligence. Vernon, I think the best way to start is by getting straight into the future of SMEs in the local retail industry. Based on data, how long do you think the effects of the pandemic and the MCO are going to last? Like, what is the situation looking like?
Wow. Well, so we actually released some numbers about a few weeks back, and those what we've seen across. Let's look at the F&B sector as one segment. We've actually seen a decline of on average of 85% across these F&B stores. If you compare the period, the MCO period that we've seen now versus the same period in 2019, so there's an 85% decline. And we actually that is actually backed up by the Department of Statistics in Malaysia as well, which just recently they released a report 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And it says that it's about 86.4% overall decline in the F&B sector. So our numbers are not too far off, but 85% for us, 86.4% in the F&B for the Department of Statistics in Malaysia. And that's a massive drop, right? This is a huge cash flow crunch that everyone in that sector is going through. Now, in other sectors, we've seen declines as well. The only sector that seems to have, of course, that has seen improvements is the supermarket grocery chain. They've seen our data shows about a 16% growth, which actually is not as much as most people assume would have they would have grown by. But our data shows about 16% revenue growth over the same period. So what we're seeing in the long run is a major cash crunch happening, cash flow crunch for most SMEs. So F&B have been allowed to open. Many others are only now starting to open up. And now, right now, they're going to be very busy, desperately even trying to claw back cash. And I think, as we were just saying just now, people aren't really wanting to go out yet to buy or to consume. And everyone's a bit more cautious about their expense. They are far more value conscious, price sensitive. So we're going to see a lot of changes in consumer spending in the next 6 months, and that can extend all the way to a year, especially if that cash flow crunch that most SMEs are facing is not addressed. So if you ask me how long are we in for, I think we're in for a long period, at least 12 months of turmoil in the market.
So, you know, like speaking about, you know, data and as someone who sort of studies the way these things work and has a sort of insight on how the retail industry works locally, could any form of knowledge or analysis have prepared SMEs and businesses against something like this? Because we use the word unprecedented a lot. But, yes, you know, was there like any form of data analysis that could have, you know, detailed enough information for something as bad as this?
All right. I think this one caught almost everyone unawares, right? This is really, I guess, the popular term everyone's throwing out now is black swan. It's a black swan event. And no data could have predicted this. What we did see was from December onwards, there was a slowdown in consumption. There was a slowdown in the amount of revenue that retailers were seeing, right? Even with the Christmas sales. And then leading up to Chinese New Year, we did see a drop in revenue. So we could already predict that there was going to be caution in the coming year. However, with the data that we've seen, it really depends. If you've been someone who has been actively monitoring the information of how your businesses are doing, you would have already seen the slowdown, and you would already see the inventories that are moving versus the inventories that are not moving. And for those customers, those people who have been looking at their data and who have had, what I call inventory discipline, they had already started streamlining and starting to improve their efficiencies. They are far better placed right now as opposed to everyone else who was just caught off guard by the MCO.
So this brings me to Energia Labs itself and Cicada. So have your own products or platforms sort of adapted or evolved to reflect recent events? Like because the pandemic affects all businesses, right? Like all everything. So how did it affect the way Cicada works?
Mm. So I guess, we are a retail data analytics platform. So we're hosted on the cloud. For us personally, if we look at ourselves personally, even before the government announced the MCO, we already announced our team to start working from home. So that was quite prescient of us, I guess, pat on the back. And right now, I'm honestly wondering whether I need an office space. Now, on the product side, our solution, Cicada, has always been focused on helping retailers on their improving their revenue and reducing their costs. So what we do is we ingest a lot in real time all their transaction data. And then our system on the background is always analyzing and visualizing that data for the retailer. So they log into our platform, they can see their sales, they can see their performance of their outlets, they can see how their customers are behaving, all in real time. And so during the MCO, the biggest challenge that we see everyone facing, especially in our retail clients, they're facing reduced demand and therefore reduced revenue. As I mentioned earlier, F&B revenue dropped 85% compared to the same period last year. So what we are doing now is we're trying to focus more of our analysis on revenue generation and focus a lot more put Cicada firmly in the revenue generating space for our retail customers. So some of the things that we've done is we've launched initiatives for our clients where we sponsor their advertising and promotions because we know they desperately need exposure. So we are actually helping them do that. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we've done is we've collaborated more closely with customer relationship management CRMs, softwares out there, as well as loyalty systems to help our retail customers better capture, analyze, and understand their customer base for sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. So they need to understand who their customers are right now. And so we are helping them to do that so that they can target them in a far more effective way. And we are also in the midst of helping our retail customers to package their data, because I think most people don't realize that their data is actually valuable. And it's valuable to FMCGs, it's valuable to brand owners, it's valuable to market research companies. So we're actually helping our retail customers to actually package that data into something that can be consumed by the FMCGs, brand owners, and market research companies. So that way, we actually are helping to monetize and create a new revenue stream for the SME market.
You know, speaking about packaging data, can I ask, like, as a service that you know, collects and translates the data, has the MCO been challenging for you to sort of package or decipher? Because normally, from what we know, trends are either gradual or they have some sort of, pattern, right? But the pandemic isn't like an anomaly, and then people are doing and buying based on fear or panic or just necessity. Consumer behavior works like within that very specific bubble. So is it tough making sense of that data because of how contained it is and it might not make any sense 2 months down the road?
As I mentioned earlier, we are forecasting that this is going to last quite a while. And in fact, mm-hmm. you've absolutely pointed out the right problem. Most FMCGs and brand owners are facing a very unprecedented situation. They don't know how their products are being consumed right now. Right. So their supply chain has been disrupted. Their manufacturing orders, their factory orders are uncertain. So it's either it's a lot of consumption or it's very little consumption. And there's that issue of predictability. So if we can compile, or if they can get that data in real time, see the offtake data, how the consumption data of their products from the merchants who are carrying their products, it actually helps position them to better plan their supply chain, better plan their logistics, better plan their factory orders, so that there is no wastage in terms of excess or hanging orders. There is no revenue loss where they could not predict the amount that people are consuming, and therefore they do not produce enough, and so they have a revenue loss over there.
Right. I'm speaking with Vernon Chua, retail data expert and CEO of Energia Labs, about the effects of the pandemic on the retail industry and what data says about the future of local businesses. We will be back in a bit. BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
It's all about data and the retail industry on today's show. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, and I'm joined on the phone by Vernon Chua, CEO of Energia Labs. What are some of the most interesting trends you've seen happening because of the MCO that you're willing to share with us?
When you look at essential goods, mm-hmm. and you look at what customers are buying off the shelves, and you look at what they are leaving behind, it's actually very interesting. It's very interesting. So they seem to be brand conscious,
yep.
right now, right? Even in the midst of this MCO and panic buying, people go for known brands, even for essential goods. So what we've seen is that all the known brands for essential goods, they are taken off the shelves straight away. But many of the not really known brands who are selling exactly the same product for a lower price are not moving as fast as the known brands. So that has been a very interesting takeaway and insight for me, that even in the midst of panic buying, your brand awareness matters. So I thought that, for me, that was an interesting insight into the importance, even in this season, of your branding. I guess that is the insight that I would take away without having to reveal too much about about who and what that was. Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, what kind of lessons can businesses learn and implement in their workflow moving forward? You know, after this very steep learning curve, a very drastic learning curve, what are some of the things that they can take away from this, like silver linings or lessons and implement in their workflow, just to build back up again?
Okay. So I think what they need to do, one key lesson that should be learned, it's going to be very painful, especially now, but it's something that if they can actually work on and survive, it's actually a very good lesson to go forward, especially SMEs. A lot of SMEs don't have that inventory discipline that is needed for them to manage their costs and streamline their operations, as well as to make their branding very clear to their customers. You know, what exactly are you selling? Your customers go to you because they want to get something from you, and you should be known for something. For some reason, I guess maybe because during the good times, it doesn't really matter so much. Many of these SMEs carry a lot of underperforming inventory. So right now, what they need to do is understand what it is they're good at selling. What are they known for? Because customers, as I mentioned earlier, trust you for something. They trust a brand for something. So inventory discipline is something they need to exercise right now. The second thing they should really look at is their, especially for the mid-sized SMEs, right? If say, and I'm going to look at, I'm going to talk about retailers in particular, because that's my specialty. So mid-sized retailers tend to have multiple outlets. They have a chain of outlets. Right now, they're going to have some really underperforming outlets. And they're going to start wondering, how should I shut down or how should I streamline? Now, what they need to do is start grouping their outlets into revenue bands. Like, you know, so the top performing band, the mid-performing band, and maybe the low-performing band as a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they need to understand, at the top performing band, what makes them successful? Is it their location? Right now, is it in this current MCO period, is it their ability to deliver and cater to a much larger catchment area? Because when they understand what's making their existing outlets successful, that is going to be the formula they need to follow when the strategy that they need to have once the crisis ends. And I think, sorry, another one just came to my head. It's revenue generation, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to need to create a quick cash flow revenue generating idea. So for many restaurants, many retailers, what they're doing is they're trying to sell vouchers now so that they can quickly generate cash flow. And the adage, cash is king, cannot be understated, whether in good times or bad times. So once they have an idea on how to quickly generate cash flow, and if it works, especially in this crisis period, it will definitely work once the crisis ends. So this kind of looking and addressing the situations within themselves to see how they can serve their customers better and how they can quickly generate revenue is key for their success, not just now, but also in the future.
Yeah, and we've also mentioned, you know, a couple of times, a few times already, that, you know, the brick and mortar scene or the retail scene was kind of struggling to adapt before all of this. You know, is there any hope that they'll go back to their glory days moving forward? Or is online the only way or the only complement? Because online platforms sort of came to the rescue during the MCO, you know. Without that, okay, some businesses would have gone bankrupt almost immediately. That was their only source of, that was their lifeline. So, you know, will brick and mortar recover completely, or is that out of the books at this point?
Oh, no. Definitely the future is convergence. It's not a one or zero scenario. It's not binary that way. I believe there is a place for brick and mortar. There is a place for online, and there is a place where both converge and meet. And that is going to be the future moving forward. And that data is, what I'm saying isn't just a guess. It's actually what is happening in China. Now, if we take away this MCO crisis, if we take away the COVID-19 crisis, what we were seeing, the data coming out of China, was that there was starting to see a convergence where brick and mortar retailers were starting to grow again. Their shopping malls were starting to thrive again. And this was due to two main reasons. One is that the cost of acquisition for online e-commerce, for online players, had grown very high. It became very expensive. The second thing is that the brick and mortar retailers were moving online as well and converging their online and offline presence. Ultimately, it depends on how you cater for your customers' needs and how you design the experience for them. Not everyone wants to shop for everything online. There will be touch and feel is still part and parcel of certain sectors within the retail world. And malls have started to move towards a more lifestyle approach, right? Right. So last time, where lifestyle would take maybe 15% of their space in a mall, that has grown to about 40%. So lifestyle is, you know, F&B, it's cinemas, skating rinks, childcare centers, all that. The lifestyle model definitely touch and feel. And so malls have adapted for that experience, and retailers are moving and taking up that space. And so you will see that lifestyle and therefore customer experience will become a very major way for brick and mortar retailers to keep reaching out to their customer base. But that being said, they will need to have an online presence. I think situations like today we've seen it, if you're not online, unless you're a supermarket, it's almost impossible for you to survive. You will need to be able to have an online presence and guarantee a last mile delivery to your customer. So there are two things that are playing out. One is convenience, and the other one is experience, right? They have to juggle between those two, convenience and experience. And the one who can combine the two together in a seamless way is going to be the winner.
Right. We are going to take a quick break for some messages, but we'll continue this discussion on data and the retail industry when we come back. Powering through the pandemic, BFM 89.9.
Be financially minded. BFM 89.9.
Powering through the pandemic on BFM 89.9, we are discussing data, business, and what the retail scene can look forward to in the next few months after being completely derailed by the pandemic. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned like malls and you know, sort of catering to the lifestyle part of the consumer, because, you know, what about like large shopping malls? Because we always like to joke that Malaysians are addicted to shopping centers, like they love shopping centers. So is it even wise to open new shopping centers in the next couple of years, you know, with it already struggling?
Well, you know, we Malaysians love free aircon. So, right, and it's fun, you know. You go into a shopping mall; it's an experience. You bring your family, multiple different things. So you can cater for a certain experience for your customers. That being said, I think it's clear, unarguably clear, that we have too many malls concentrated in a very small area, catchment area. Right, so you know, I'm not going to say mall. You shouldn't build malls anymore. It really depends on where and what catchment area you're servicing. The malls aren't differentiating themselves. They're all carrying the same brands, the same restaurants. And so for more operators, they're going to have to think about more clearly about what it is they're bringing to their catchment area and their neighborhood. And in fact, this all ties in, not just for malls, but even for retailers. There's this thing, right? Everyone is doing the same thing now. Everyone is going online. So when your SMEs are all going online, you get crowded out with all the noise. You are competing with everyone, your Facebook ads, your Instagram ads, you know, your social media and your Google ads, all that. Everyone is pumping the same money into the same space. Mm-hmm. And so how do you differentiate yourself? So the online world has this idea where you need to go big or you go home. You need to target everyone and make your catchment area as large as possible. For purely online businesses, that makes sense. But for your brick and mortar, that doesn't make as much sense. You have diminishing returns on that because your catchment area only goes so far. So there's this strategy, and it's called hyper-localization. And I think this is a word that we need to make a bit more popular now, because hyperlocalization is the idea that your business is part of a community, and that community can either be geographical. In fact, most times it is geographical, or it can be a niche, right, where you're servicing a very select group of customers, and you succeed by being able to tailor your products or your services to that geographical area or to that specific group of customers. So it's counterintuitive to the, you know, go wide or go big or go home approach. It's far more targeted. It's far more disciplined. And so this strategy emphasizes quality of experience for the customer through either service or product or domain knowledge. And so for example, for a local mall to succeed, now, not everyone can be a mega mall or a Wanutama or a Sunway Pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. But for the smaller malls, they're going to have to look towards how can they service the needs of their local neighborhoods, right? The neighborhoods that surround them. And how can do they differentiate themselves from the other mall that is 5 kilometers away or 10 kilometers away, right? So this hyper-localization is important, not just for the malls, but also for the smaller retailers, the smaller F&B operators. They need to engage their community, their geographic community, far wiser, far better. And honestly, to do this, usually you will have to have a good understanding through data of your customers. You know, so you need to invest in a customer relationship management tool or a loyalty program. You need to see who is it you're attracting and how you can engage them more, or how you can get them to speak about you more and get more people in. And servicing within your locality, your hyper-locality.
Vernon, I think the best way to, you know, finish this interview would be to talk about this new normal that everyone's mentioning. You know, like, what's the new normal, not just for you, but for you, for the retail scene, for everything? What does that phrase, new normal, mean to you?
Okay, so I actually am not very fond of that phrase, because mm-hmm. that makes it sound as though things are going to, what we are seeing now is going to stay the same forever, right? Or rather, for the long term. I don't actually hold on to that. I think it's going to be here. I guess if you say normal in the next 6 months or the next 1 year, yeah, that's the new normal. But what is happening now is absolutely abnormal. What we are going to see in the next 1 year, next 2 years, is once again that idea of convergence. So definitely what is happening now is customer spending habits and their wallet sizes are changing, right? Their wallet sizes, we're going to see in the next 12 months, 12 to 24 months, is going to be much smaller. And so customers are going to be far more price sensitive and value driven. So what SMEs need to do now is they need to start do a pricing analysis if they can. They need to start seeing what prices the customers are comfortable at spending. I'll give you an example. Actually, this has been a trend that has been happening in the last 3 years, 3 to 5 years, in fact. If you notice, the large supermarkets, the large hypermarkets, they've been retreating. And what we've seen is many small local supermarkets sprouting up to take their place. And what's happened is that our local supermarkets and our local hypermarkets, they cater for price sensitivity. They may not look as bright and may not look as fancy as these international chains, but they get the job done. And their pricing always seems to be more focused on the lower income groups, or at least the M40 at least. And these ones have been growing, where the international chains have been retreating. And we see that this is going to happen even more in the next 12 months. So if you look at the data now, your smaller, your everyday Malaysian foods, your chicken rice, your nasi lemak, I'm not talking about the premium nasi lemak, I'm talking about your local neighborhood nasi lemak kind of joint. Mm-hmm. They are performing better. I'm not saying they're doing well, but they are performing better compared to their premium neighbors, right? Those who are selling very high-priced goods. So we're going to see this price sensitivity, and everyone is going to have to accommodate that new normal of price sensitivity. That's one thing that they really need to start thinking about right now. They cannot operate and think that, you know what, I sold my item at this price, it's going to have to be this price and I'm not going to change it at all. They're going to actually have to start thinking about how they reduce that to fit the, I guess in your words, new normal of consumer behavior. Another thing that they need to start getting used to is the idea of the online world. And everyone is now rushing in and just spending, just trying to get Facebook ads, trying to get social media ads, Google ads and all that. And just trying to, and then they're entering all these WhatsApp groups and just trying to blast themselves out there. I think for them to just do that, like I said, it's going to create too much noise. I think they need to start being a bit more nuanced and clever about how they do it. And finally, I think they need to look at their data. Of course, I'm going to say that. This is selfish of me, but actually I believe that is the future. It's why I'm here, right? The data is going to be everyone calls it the new oil. And it is true, because with all this uncertainty, everyone actually needs empirical data in order to make decisions. And so data is going to be very important for governments to craft their strategies on how to come out of this. It's going to be very important for FMCGs, for brand owners, and how they approach the market. In fact, there's a whole idea about, now everyone's rushing to make marketing spend and putting out advertisements just to get people to come to them, right? There's going to be a time where we need to, in fact, it's not going to be a time, it's happening already, where they're going to want to tie the advertising dollar to actual revenue return on investments. And they need a more transparent way of tracking that. And that's where data from their merchants is going to play a pivotal role. And so merchants need to understand that there is a demand from their supply side on their data, and that they can actually make a revenue stream of this for themselves out of it. So these are the things that I think moving forward, the new normal, as you put it, that's going to happen.
Vernon, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Right, that was Vernon Chua, CEO of Energia Labs, expanding on what the retail industry can do to recover as best as possible from the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and its ensuing MCO and CMCO phases. This interview is also available via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my. You can also get it on the BFM app, which you can download for free on the Apple App Store on Google Play. Alternatively, we are on Spotify. You can find us there under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Powering Through the Pandemic, BFM 89.9.
Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM
89.9. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.